Nuketown Radioactive number 64 for Tuesday, April 8th, 2008. This episode of Nuketown Radioactive is brought to you by the letter F. Also, Jordan turns 5, we buy car camping gear, Nuketown gets upgraded, Critical Hits blogs about the life of role-playing gamers, Reaper announces modern-day miniatures, Mac Mommy figures out how to balance teaching, technology, and raising a toddler, and finally, I've got a review of the excellent puzzle game, Portal.
Friends, geek dads travel in packs. Here comes Ken Newquist with Nuketown Radioactive.
Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive, the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. I am your host, Ken Newquist, and I just got back from probably one of the best business trips I've been on in my life. I went to San Francisco for a higher education technology conference, and it was pretty cool. I mean, the conference itself was okay. I met a lot of cool people, which was really cool. And, cool people. As you can tell, it's late at night and I'm tired and Lucas is screaming his head off. So my thoughts aren't quite focused yet. But anyway, I went to a pretty decent conference. I presented at the conference on the topic of Hack DocFest for Moodle, which you may remember me talking about earlier this year. And I also got to spend a lot of time in San Francisco. I went out a little bit early and I got to spend some time doing, well, touristy kind of things in San Francisco, which was very nifty. So I got to go in the cable cars, both the old-fashioned and new-fashioned versions, meaning the ones that are drawn by cables and the ones powered by electricity. I got to go to Alcatraz with my friend Courtney. I also got to go to a baseball game. I got to go to see the Oakland Athletics with my boss, John. And generally speaking, got to have just a blast of a time. It was really nice to be in San Francisco, particularly when it was just so beautiful there. I mean, we were there for 5 days. I think it was sunny all 5 days. I mean, it was just spectacular. So I also got to get a lot of reading done on the flight out. It was 6 hours to San Francisco, 5 hours to get back. So that gave me a lot of time to kind of geek out with my Nintendo DS, play a little Zelda, get caught up on some reading. For example, I finished reading The Sky People, which is the book of the month for the Secret Lair's, book of the month club. It was just, you know, a nice relaxing break. Now, I really did miss my kids quite a lot. So obviously, you know, by the end of probably around 3 days, I was really starting to miss them. And by the fourth and fifth days, I was probably really annoying my coworkers with how much I was talking about them. But in any case, it was still a great trip. I had a lot of fun and it was nice to be able to have a break come, you know, right about the middle of the semester, a little bit past the middle of the semester, where I could just downshift for a couple of days, not really have anything I needed to get done, relax, see a baseball game, and just, revel in the wonder that is San Francisco. Now, I do have a geek warning that came up, actually a geek parents warning that came up during the trip. And basically it's this: do not watch The Mist. Now, those of you who are Stephen King fans will recognize the title. He wrote, I think it's probably a novella called The Mist, which is about this evil fog that comes to New England and brings with it all kinds of monstrous horrors that attack out of the mist. And you may think that you know how it ends. I certainly thought I knew how it ends. Stephen King kind of leaves it open-ended. You don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you're generally hopeful that the main characters will survive. Suffice it to say that the movie doesn't end like the short story does, and it ends on just a truly horrifying and awful note. And I don't want to get into it too much in the podcast. I wrote about it on Nuketown. There'll be a link in the show notes. You can find out more about it there. But I just want to say, just don't watch the movie. If you have kids, if you know people who have kids, if you like kids, You know, if you're just a, well, a good human being, don't watch the movie, because honestly, you're really, really, really going to hate it. And you're not going to hate the first 90 minutes or so of it. You're going to hate the last 5 minutes, because the ending, well, let's just put it this way. It filled me with horror for 2 days. That's how bad it was. So let's leave it at that. Don't watch The Mist. On a happier note, Jordan's turned 5. This heralded our first viewing of The Chronicles of Narnia, which is something we had talked about for a long time. I think since Jordan was maybe 3.5, we've been talking about seeing The Chronicles of Narnia. And I don't exactly remember what gave rise to the whole you'll see Chronicles when you're 5. I think it's because she's interested in watching Star Wars, but Sue and I know that Star Wars will be too scary for her. So we figured, well, we'll start off with Chronicles of Narnia, which has some scary parts in it, in the original movie, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But it's manageable. And if she likes that, maybe we'll move on to the first Harry Potter movie. And if she likes that, then maybe we'll get to Harry Potter. We'll see how it goes. But it worked out really well. She liked it. We sat on the sofa, we had some popcorn, and we watched Chronicles of Narnia. She did not really like the Ice Queen. In fact, that's the one part of the movie she says she doesn't like. But, you know, it's the scariest part of the movie, right? So that's not too surprising. But she really liked the kids. She liked the fact that everybody became kings and queens at the end of the movie. And I think she liked the fantastical elements to it. She's been asking a lot of questions about the wolves, who are the queen's enforcers, talking about the fox that basically was the little spy who's working for Aslan. And I think overall, she really enjoyed it. So that gives me hope that eventually we will get around to seeing Star Wars. But first, we're going to watch Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone probably next week. She's the one who decided that she wanted to do this. She actually saw it when she was probably about 2.5 because Sue thought, oh, you know, this might be a fun movie for her. She might enjoy this because she was so into princesses and just the fantastical realms and stuff. But Sue kind of forgot about the whole troll part of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Also, we get a glimpse of Lord Voldemort drinking the blood of a unicorn. I don't know how well she's going to deal with that. When she was 2, she stopped at the troll. But now she has said that she wants to try again. So we'll see. If she doesn't like it, we can always turn it off, right? Now, the one thought I did have about when we do eventually watch Star Wars is how to watch it outside of the theater and still get the maximum impact. I mean, part of what made Star Wars so good for me as a kid was the larger-than-life aspects of it. To be sitting in the theater and seeing the Star Destroyers soaring overhead, the explosions, the lights, the lightsaber duels, you know, the whole everything that goes with the whole Star Wars experience. And I don't think that my rather pathetic television is really going to be able to capture that. So I'm thinking that maybe a trip to my friend Erlar's house is in order, because he's got the really nice big TV and the surround sound. And I bet you that I could probably convince him and his son to watch Star Wars just one more time so that Jordy could get the more theatrical experience. So the other thing I was wondering about involves Luke Skywalker's dad. And this can be considered a spoiler warning for those of you who are geek parents who have not had your kids watch the movies yet. So you might want to skip ahead further or just stop listening now. So my question for you all is simply this. Is it irrational for me to not want Jordan to discover the secrets of Star Wars before she's watched the movies? Now, what gave rise to this was there's a Star Wars exhibit down in Philadelphia, which sounds pretty cool. It's at the Franklin Institute, could be fun, but I don't want her to go to it yet because she hasn't seen the movies. And, you know, there's big reveals in the movies, particularly involving Luke Skywalker's relationship to Darth Vader. And I want that to be a surprise for her. And I know that every year that passes that she hasn't seen the movies, someone's going to blurt it out. And she may still know it before she gets there. But I'd still really like for the, you know, to go into it with her not knowing those secrets so that she can be just as surprised as we all were when we saw Empire Strikes Back and when we saw Return of the Jedi and, you know, the big secrets were revealed. And honestly, Sue thinks I'm a little weird. We were talking about it, and I explained to her why, well, I didn't want to go to see the Star Wars exhibit down in Philadelphia, at least with Jordan, because she's not ready yet, you know? I want her to see the movies, and then we can go do all that stuff. And once she's had that big reveal, which, you know, at 5 may not have as much impact as it did for me when I was 7, but still, you know, I'd like to have her to have that opportunity. But what do you guys think? Is it a big deal? Is it not? You can let me know by sending me an email at nuketown@gmail.com or just post a comment in the show notes. So her 5th birthday went really well. She was under the somewhat mistaken impression that turning 5 meant she could immediately go to kindergarten instead of waiting until the new academic school year began, but we've explained to her that that's not the case. She did, however, get to go for her kindergarten evaluation, so that is looming large. Preschool will soon be drawing to a close, and Jordy will actually be starting elementary school. How amazingly crazy is that? Now, on the Luke front, well, Luke is speaking quite a lot more. There's been a real word explosion over the last, well, 2 to 3 weeks or so, and he is now saying a whole bunch of words, most of which begin with the letter F. So he's saying 5, frog, fall. He's also saying fuffy, which took us about, well, 3 weeks to figure out. That means sofa. And fiffy, which is fish. Which actually he calls the turtle Fiffy because he thinks the turtle is a fish, but at least we're understanding what he's talking about. He also says some stuff that's really helpful to us, which is seat, when he wants to sit in his seat. Me, he'll identify himself as me. He refuses to actually say his name as Luke or Lucas, but he will say me. So if you ask him who he is, he'll say me. He'll say please, he'll say help, he'll say sit, all of which is just great, because, you know, for the last 2 months, 3 months, whatever, we've been trying to get him to say help when he needs help rather than just whining. And parents, you will certainly know what I mean about the whine. When they can go from the whine to actually asking you a question, asking you for help, it's night and day. So that was pretty cool. He still doesn't say yes, but he firmly knows how to say no. And he says it quite often. That's been a lot of fun. Let's see what else. He's still just completely obsessed with cars, but he's been mixing it up a little bit. He's been using some of Jordan's little pet shop animals and actually putting them in the cars to drive and like talking to them and making them talk and moving them around, which is nice because he can get, you know, really, really into his cars. And it's nice that he's now starting to mix things up and not just simply going all cars all the time. That having been said, there are presently 8 cars sitting on the Fuffy. So clearly cars will continue to play a large role in his young life, but he is branching out. Now, on another family note, we got a tent. That's right. We got a big tent. We went out to Cabela's near Harrisburg and bought a tent for car camping, which is to be distinguished from backpacking, which is what Sue and I have done in the past. Well, more Sue than me. But I have gone to Alaska backpacking with Sue, so I do have some backpacking cred. But the idea here is we get a tent, we throw it in the back of the car, and we go to a campsite. When we camp with the kids, it's a pretty big tent. I can stand up in this thing without actually hitting my head on the top of it. So that's pretty nifty. And yes, this does mean that camping is in my geeky future this summer. But fortunately, I have both a stack of science fiction novels that need to be read and my Nintendo DS. Now, how to smuggle it in the car without Sue noticing. As far as Nuketown itself, well, folks, we've got upgrades. I've been slowly working my way through some updates that I want to make to the site in terms of what it's actually capable of. And the first thing is that thanks to a new anti-spam module for Drupal, I've opened up comments so you no longer need an account or to remember your password to post a comment. It's something I've wanted to do for a while, but there's just so many freaking spammers out there that I just could not open it up unless I had a little bit of protection on the site. Now I have a lot of protection on the site. The module, which I think it's called Eskimet, just does an excellent job of identifying spam. Absolutely no spam has gotten through. And I may take it to the next step of just opening things up so that anyone who posts a comment will have it automatically published to Nuketown, and only spam will be held back. Right now, I'm still moderating everything and reviewing stuff just because I want to make sure that the spam module is doing its job. I'm also experimenting with the views module for Drupal, which will hopefully bring about the return of the link section. Those of you who remember the old site will know that there was a link port which had something like 500 odd links in it. I still have all those links in a database, and I want to include them in the new site, but I don't want to have a standalone database to incorporate it back into Nuketown. So what I'm hoping is that Views will allow me to do what I need to do. Actually, it has to do what I want it to do, because this is actually a test for something I'm planning to do with one of the sites at work with a similar kind of hyperlinked resource kind of thing. So you can look forward to that returning to the site probably sometime later this month. I'm also working on a WYSIWYG editor. Basically, there's another module that incorporates a WYSIWYG editor into your site, which will hopefully speed up my posting and allow me to do images more easily within Drupal, which all of which should make it just a lot easier for me to add stuff to the site, which, you know, as a geek dad, I'm looking for whatever efficiencies I can find. On a final note, I had some feedback from some folks who listened to the show. John, who's commented several times on the blog, informed me that he's had twin girls, wow, which is just just amazing. We have friends who have twins, and I know that they love them dearly and that it has been one hell of an adventure. So I wish John all the best of luck with his new girls. I think it's going to be a hell of a ride. I know it's been fantastic with my two kids, and I know he already has one, but now to add in two more, wow, that's just blows my mind. And I know it's going to be a lot of work, but I think it's also going to be a heck of a lot of fun. So, pretty cool. Now, the other person who got in touch with me was Tom Vasky. I think it's all one word, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. But anyway, just stop by to say hi. He's following me on Twitter. He started Twittering a bit himself. So, hi, Tom. Hi, John. Thanks for the feedback. I greatly appreciate hearing from folks. It is always fantastic to know that I'm just not speaking to myself when I'm recording these podcasts.
Do you find yourself wondering how to keep it all straight with all those great RPG podcasts out there on the internet? Like a flaming, dancing, Vorpal plus five, holy avenger of awesome. Check out RPGpodcast.com.
So, leading off Netheads this week is Critical Hits, which you can find at www.critical-hits.com. Link, as always, in the show notes, which is basically a blog about gaming life. Recent posts have had interviews from folks and designers who are at D&D Experience, which was a role-playing game convention. He also has posts about Xbox 360 and Wii. Also, just general notes about geekery. Including stuff such as the DC direct-to-DVD releases of anime Batman and Justice League. So definitely worth stopping by if you're like me and enjoy a little bit of gaming, a little bit of video gaming, and, well, Justice League, right? Now, next up is actually a bit of gaming news, which is this. Reaper, which produces both metal and plastic miniatures for role-playing games and for like tabletop miniature games, has released a new line called Chronoscopes. Actually, they're going to be releasing this line in June. And basically, it's non-fantasy figures for use with modern sci-fi horror games. Or at least that's what I'm guessing based on the preview figs. It looks really cool. And honestly, this is exactly the sort of thing I'd like to use with Savage Worlds, Mutants and Masterminds, pretty much any other game, Battlestar Galactica, that I can convince my friends to play, all of which are set in the modern time period. So being able to have a nice line of minis that reinforces the whole modern gaming thing is just fantastic. I don't need elves, I don't need dwarves, I don't need wizards, but I do need soldiers, I do need hackers, I do need, you know, just any other modern era figure that I could use if I wanted to throw together, say, a Savage Stargate campaign or one shot or something for a con. Because I think one of the things that I found, at least when playtesting a new game, particularly a game that people haven't played before, maybe haven't heard a lot of, is that miniatures help. It helps capture the setting of the game. It helps capture the feel of things. And if you have to use bottle caps and dice to represent your miniatures, it just kind of takes people out of it a little bit. Whereas if you can put down a squad of Space Marines, that has impact. So I'm really looking forward to this line. I'm going to be keeping up with the announcements, and I'm hoping to buy me some miniatures and even paint them come June. Now, the last site I wanted to talk about is The Mac Mommy, which you can find at themacmommy.blogspot.com. This is basically a blog about learning kids, Macs, and moms all in one place. Recent posts, or rather notable posts, would include a comparison of Flickr versus Picasa, which is Google's photo/image app. Tales of raising a toddler boy, which I can certainly relate to. It seems like the Mac Mom and I have been on the same page more than once with regards to our little boys running amok. And then finally, just posts about technology and kids. All very cool stuff, all very timely, and I think very useful for anyone who is raising small kids and looking to see how they can incorporate computers into their lives. Also good for anyone who works in education and is just looking for suggestions on how they can better enhance their teaching and classroom technology.
This woman like bees, Sarge. I don't think we're going to make it.
Damn it, Bukowski. Keep your head together. We're going to win that hill if it's the last thing we do.
Sorry, Sarge. I just don't know what to do.
What? Why not? Did you listen to the Accidental Survivors podcast?
You mean the podcast about modern tabletop role-playing games and related media topics?
Yeah, the one put together by the Swords Edge publishing guys.
Sorry, Sarge, I didn't!
Sorry I'm late, I was listening to the Accidental Survivors podcast, and then I went and sabotaged the enemy lines.
Logan, you beautiful bastard!
Let's go take that hill, men.
The Accidental Survivors Podcast, a podcast about modern tabletop role-playing systems and related topics. Visit us at the web at accidentalsurvivors.libsyn.com.
Give my daughter a call sometime, Logan.
I got the Orange Box for Christmas, which includes Half-Life 2, Half-Life 2 Episodes 1 and 2, Team Fortress 2, and a little game called Portal. Now, you may have heard about Portal, but this is what the deal is. The premise is really simple. You've been trapped in a massive experimental complex. You soon meet a, shall we say, less than benevolent computer intelligence who asks you to conduct a series of increasingly difficult and dangerous tasks. All of these tasks involve something called the portal gun, which allows you to shoot two kinds of portals. One is an entrance portal, and one's an exit portal. You shoot these into walls, and basically this allows you to, say, shoot a portal in the floor, shoot a portal in the ceiling, and then fall through the floor to the ceiling. Okay, so it may be a little bit hard to describe through audio, but the idea is that you use these different portals to navigate through the different rooms. And it allows you to, say, throw up a portal on the left wall, and then throw a portal up on the right wall, and move through different challenges. Now, things get a little bit more complicated as you go along. It's not just going from point A to point B via hyperspace point C. There are also triggers, either weight or energy, which you must set up, sometimes by carefully herding balls of energy around a room, or possibly grabbing a large box and throwing it onto a weight-triggered button. There's also gravity and velocity in the game. So basically what happens is that you need to clear a very large room. In order to do this, you throw a portal at the top of the room, right where, say, the north wall meets the ceiling. You then jump off a cliff, and as you're jumping off the cliff, you shoot a portal. You enter that portal, and you come flying out of the portal near the top of the room, which allows you to suddenly shoot across the room and land on the platform on the other side. Again, a little bit difficult to describe, but do a quick search on Portal, and you'll quickly find videos explaining how to get through some of the challenges, because they are fiendishly difficult. It's a very clever, very puzzling game, and exceedingly fun, if you're a geek. Otherwise, well, my wife describes it as being the most boring game ever. Even worse than shooting communist boxes, which is something I did back in GoldenEye on, Nintendo 64. Sorry. It's a long joke between me and my wife. Anyway, Jordan loves it. She thinks that my failures navigating the different rooms and trying to figure out exactly where to put the portals are hilarious, and she loves to offer lots of advice about how to move around the room. And this is a major point in the game's favor. You can pretty much play this game around kids, as long as you ignore the whole blood stains on the floor thing, which are admittedly pretty infrequent. It's really cool to have Jordan sitting on the sofa next to me and start to puzzle out how to move the room because she gets how the different portals work. And she also likes to tell me how to time things, so, you know, I'll jump off the cliff and then she'll say, okay, Dad, I'll tell you when to shoot the gun, okay? So she gets it, which is really fun. It's also good for casual play. While some of the puzzles are infuriatingly difficult, it's easy to walk away from them if you need to. And honestly, what geek parent doesn't need to? This was a game that while I was playing it, I was able to do probably about one puzzle a night, maybe two puzzles a night, and be able to leave it at that, which isn't something you can say about a lot of games. Now, one word to the wise. This game can be nausea-inducing. And I mean really, really nausea-inducing. If NASA isn't using this thing to train astronauts, then they should. Because here's what happens. On some of them, you have to jump through a portal to shoot yourself up in the air, and then quickly reorient yourself, shoot another portal, and then come bouncing out through that. And what's basically happening as you're falling through these different portals is that gravity will reassert itself as you're falling. So you'll shoot up through a portal, and you'll be looking down, and then suddenly you'll be looking up, and all of a sudden you'll reorient, and you'll start looking down again. But then you need to spin to the right to be able to fire off that one shot that will form the new portal that allows you to come out somewhere else. And I'll admit, you know, there have been more than a couple times playing this game where I just had to put it down and let it go for a night or two because it just made me nauseous playing it. And, you know, this is something that I've run into actually with the Half-Life engine, both in Half-Life and Half-Life 2, is there's just something about it, and I'm not quite sure what it is. I think it has something to do with the physics, where it's always made me a little bit nauseous. I never had this problem with any other first-person shooters, but, you know, I remember this happening with Half-Life, and when I popped Half-Life 2 into the Xbox, lo and behold, nausea reared its ugly head yet again. But that having been said, Portal is an awesome game. It's well worth the nausea. Maybe take a little Dramamine before you do it. It's just so much fun. It's so refreshing. It's so different. It's so amusing in the form of this computer who is giving you encouragement, offering cake if you complete different challenges, and ultimately proves to be, shall we say, less than entirely stable. But, you know, it's just, it was a lot of fun to play, and I'm really looking forward to Portal 2, which has already been announced, and I think this game alone is probably worth getting the orange box, because, well, it was just fun. And if you haven't played, you know, Half-Life 2, this is an awesome reason to just go out, get the orange box, sit down, play through Portal, play through Half-Life 2, and just kind of get caught up with what are probably two of the coolest games in geekdom right now.
SFFaudio.com, the sound of tomorrow. Explore the limitless worlds of the imagination with SFFaudio.com. Reviews and features, audiobooks, online audio, full cast audio drama, and radio theater. The ultimate source for news from the world of science fiction and fantasy audio, brought to you by the most trusted team in the business. SFFaudio.com. The future never sounded so good.
That'll do it for this episode of Nuketown Radioactive. As always, I'm looking for feedback. You can send it to me via email at nuketown@gmail.com. I am on Twitter pretty much all day, so you can find me there by going to twitter.com/nukehavoc, and you can find me a couple of other places as well. Links to all of those places, including Facebook, Skype, Goodreads, MySpace, can be found in the show notes at nuketown.com.